As he approached Bethphage and Bethany, at the hill called the Mount of Olives, he sent two of his disciples ahead, saying to them, "Go to the village ahead of you, and as you enter it, you will find a colt tied there, which no one has ever ridden. Untie it and bring it here. If anyone asks you, 'Why are you untying the colt?' tell him the Lord needs it." Those who were sent ahead went and found it just as he had told them. As they were untying it, its owners asked him, "Why are you untying the colt?" They replied, "The Lord needs it." They brought it to Jesus, threw their cloaks on the colt, and put Jesus on it. As he went along, people spread their cloaks on the road. When he came near to the place where the road goes down the Mount of Olives, the whole crowd of disciples began joyfully to praise God in loud voices for all of the miracles they had seen. "Blessed is he who comes in the name of the Lord. Peace in heaven and glory in the highest." Some of the Pharisees spoke to Jesus and said, "Teacher, rebuke your disciples." "I tell you," he said, "if they keep quiet, the stones will cry out." As he approached Jerusalem and saw the city, he wept over it and said, "If you, even you, had only known this day, what would bring you peace? But now it is hidden from your eyes. The days will come upon you when your enemies will build an embankment and surround you, encircle you, and hem you in on every side. They will dash you to the ground, you and your children within your walls. They will not leave one stone on another because you did not recognize the time of God's coming to you." A mother and a baby camel were talking one day when the baby asked his mother, "Mom, why have I got these large three-toed feet?" And the mother replied, "Well, son, when we trek across the desert, your toes will help you stay on top of that soft sand." "Okay," said the son. A few minutes later, he came back with another question, "Mom, why have I got these great big long eyelashes?" "They're there to keep the sand out of your eyes on those trips through the desert." "Thanks, Mom," replied the son. And after a short while, he returned again and asked, "Mom, why have I got these great big humps on my back?" The mother, now a little impatient with her son, said, "They're there to help store up water for those long treks across the desert so we can go without drinking water for a long time." "That's great, Mom," said the son. "We have huge three-toed feet so we won't sink down into the sand, and we have these huge eyelashes to keep the sand from getting into our eyes, and we have these humps on our back to store water so we can go on long trips across the desert. But Mom, why are we here in the San Diego Zoo?" When Jesus rode down from the Mount of Olives toward the city of Jerusalem, he didn't ride a camel or a majestic stallion or a war horse. He rode down on a donkey, a lowly beast of burden, maybe to symbolize the kind of king that Jesus really was, a humble but gentle kind of king. Have you ever been to one of those scenic overlooks? Maybe the Grand Canyon or the city skyline. Maybe you've gone up to the top of one of those great buildings and looked out over the city. Or maybe you've been to Lookout Mountain in Chattanooga. A summer or two ago, Rinda and I went to West Virginia, and we drove up to the top of the highest mountain there in West Virginia, Mount Shasta, and we looked out over the valley and looked at the landscape and how small things looked below. I can imagine what Jesus must have seen as he rode down from the Mount of Olives down the hill toward the city of Jerusalem, down and then eventually back up into that city again. It was a big day for the crowd. They were coming into the city for the the festival season, the Feast of Unleavened Bread, and finally the Passover festival. And people from Galilee and the countryside and Judea were coming into the city for this great annual event. It was a big day, and along with that, there were followers who were disciples of Jesus and people who had seen miracles and amazing things. And so they were going before Jesus and following after him. And they were shouting and they were proclaiming him to be their Messiah, proclaiming him to be the one who comes in the name of the Lord, that long prophesied Messiah who was to come. What would a person see as they descended the Mount of Olives toward Jerusalem? Well, the Pharisees, as they traveled that route, may have seen the city of God, Jerusalem, this majestic city built by their ancestor, King David, and followed by Solomon in that great temple. Perhaps they would see there in the skyline Herod's temple, the temple that replaced the temple of Solomon that had been destroyed by the Babylonians centuries before. Jerusalem, the city of peace, the city of shalom. Many might have felt the civic pride as they entered the city gates and saw these walls of Jerusalem that surrounded and protected the great city of God. Those great traditions and those kinds of things might have been in the mind of the Pharisees and the religious leaders as they traveled the road. And what about the Roman soldiers? As they descended from the Mount of Olives, they may have had a different idea. Jerusalem, that troublesome place, and maybe thinking, how did I end up in a place like this? Peculiar people, religious customs, unwillingness to bend to the iron rod of the Roman government. Maybe they thought of the years of their precious lives that had been spent far away from their homeland and the people they loved. Maybe they would remember the wars and the fighting and all of the trials of trying to keep this rebellious people under control. What did Jesus see as he descended downhill on that borrowed donkey? What did he see as he was celebrated as the Messiah, the one who comes in the name of the Lord? What was it about what Jesus saw that made him different than the crowds? After all, they may have been rejoicing and celebrating and ready for this great event, but Jesus wasn't smiling. What did he see? Well, certainly he saw the buildings and the walls and the temples and the crowd. There wasn't anything that was hidden from his sight. In fact, he no doubt saw other things, like the slums and the waste and the filth of the city and the prejudice and the poverty and the injustice and perhaps the prostitutes and the slaves and those that were taking advantage of selling people as well. Mostly Jesus saw people, individuals, not the masses, but the individuals, like a mother caring for a sick child, or maybe that beggar who was begging for food just to fill his stomach for today. Maybe he saw the pilgrims from all over Galilee and the countryside bringing their animal to be sacrificed on Passover day. Maybe they were hoping that their animal would be unblemished, and so they wouldn't have to buy an animal from the temple courts instead. He no doubt saw the temple courts filled with people bustling about and selling their wares, and soldiers that were pushing and shoving to get people to keep moving. Luke tells us that when Jesus got to a certain place and looked out over the city, he began to weep. He began to cry on this glorious, blessed day. Somehow his demeanor was different from that of the crowds. When he looked out over the city, he no doubt saw people that were empty and lost. That void inside that couldn't be met by all of the things of their life. And he saw people blind and ignorant and stubborn and sinful, people who couldn't see. And he spoke from that anguished heart, "Oh, people, oh, Jerusalem, if only today you could see the things that make for peace, the things that make for shalom. If only you knew today is the day of your visitation from God. This is the day that God is with you. If only you would stop and listen and pay attention, you might realize the presence of Almighty and the message that He would give." But He said, "You are not able to see. These things are hidden from your eyes." Jesus saw the city of God missing the greatest event of history because they were unable to see and they were busy going about their other activities. The greatest event of history about to take place in that city during that time, but they couldn't see. And you know, Jerusalem's history has been one of one sad story after another, one mournful song. If you read the Psalms, you see again and again the writer of the Psalm saddened by the fact that the city is destroyed or the people are missing the point or that somehow there's a sense that God has forsaken or not answered or that things are not right. Radiant hopes have been unrealized, beautiful temples destroyed because people were unfaithful to their heavenly God and Father, vast potentials unrealized and unfulfilled, and to be honest, today isn't much different. Except for Jesus and that great event on that week and the things that happened as Jesus was crucified and buried and raised from the dead. Apart from that, the city of Jerusalem isn't any different really than cities of our day. There's still trouble, unrealized possibilities, violence and armies and forces fighting against one another, people of different religious beliefs and customs, and somehow they're all vying for the opportunity to use that city for their purposes. Except for that one event of Calvary when God redeemed men and women, Jerusalem is just another lost city. And do you know what? I can't help but think Jesus still weeps. I can't help but think He still experiences some of the same sadness and pain and heartache of that first Palm Sunday. Because in many ways in our day, even after the fact and the great events, people are still missing the main point. And if from heaven above Jesus looks down on earth and He sees Jerusalem or New York City or London or Rome or Los Angeles or Rochester, Indiana, what does He see? What does He see as He looks? In these cities, great and small, Jesus doesn't just see churches and banks and hospitals and libraries and buildings that have been erected for some common purpose or for some memorial purpose. And He doesn't just see beautiful homes and cars and modern technology. What He sees down deeper are empty souls, still empty souls, somehow trying to fill that void with TV, entertainment, food, traveling, cruise ships, and alcohol and drugs and things and phones and somehow He sees broken families. He sees people longing for peace and rest, for a chance just to get through things and find something better. And he sees wars and fightings and mass shootings and bombs being tested. And he sees political battles that don't ever seem to end. And he sees his own disciples turning away far too often, or becoming lukewarm, or falling into temptation, or being persecuted in some way. And he sees the church and Christians who know that he's the only way into the kingdom of heaven, the only way to salvation and eternal life. He sees Christians unable somehow to get their neighbors and their communities and their loved ones who don't know Jesus to stop and pay attention and listen. I think he weeps today over America and over a lost world that somehow still misses the point. America, so affluent, and yet so blind to the rest of the world and the rest of the countries and the people who suffer and who don't know and haven't heard. And he weeps over the effects of disease and illness. Coronavirus, just one of so many. Families destroyed by that virus. Nations and empires and economies brought to their knees by that virus, that illness that has come so quickly on people. And other deadly diseases and car accidents and violence of one sort and another. And he weeps over those who are afraid and those who are hurting and those who are angry and those who are somehow struggling just to get along. And maybe he weeps in a joyful way over those who are trying in some way to make a difference, responding in beautiful ways. And somehow in the toughest of times, we see people stepping up and wanting to do something and make a difference and share the love of Christ. Can you hear Jesus weeping? Do you hear him saying, "Oh, people of God, oh, my people, oh, Jerusalem, if you only knew today the things that lead to peace"? You see, peace enters our hearts when Jesus comes in. Peace comes through our trust in him and our dependence on him for life and for what is to come. Peace doesn't come by more money or by that better job or by that marriage or by the divorce or the separation or the different friends or the relationships that have come and gone. It comes through the one who even now is willing to take a role in your life, to take a place in your life. Place in your heart, to ride in to your life with salvation and power and hope and peace. Is Jesus still weeping? Can you hear him? If you hear him weeping, I wonder, what can you do to wipe away some